In the 8th century BC, cities still covered large areas, like Anyang had, with the residences of the elite defended by rammed earth walls. Relatively few people lived behind these fortifications. This was the compound of the elite. But 3 centuries later, the character of urban settlement had changed completely. Cities were no longer clusters of compounds, workshops, and rural villages. They were densely occupied, with thousands of inhabitants living in tightly packed precincts. The largest Eastern Shu city, Yangxiadu, may have housed as many as 316,000 people within a compact area of about 7.5 square miles. This was a large city by any standards. It was larger than, say, Tenochtitlan, the Aztec capital, or Teotihuacan, the capital of Mexico. It was larger than many European cities of the day, much larger. But such large cities were rarities. They were also royal centers, with the elite living in palace areas within or close to the cities. Now, in Shang times, there'd been a separation. These compounds were really separate in spatial terms. Now, the enclosures were within the crowded cities, as if perhaps, and this is a guess, royal power was somewhat weakened. At the same time, the function of the city seems to have changed considerably. Eastern Shu cities were centers of government. Not only centers of government and of ritual, but for trade and manufacturing in a compacted sort of way. Things were being pulled together. Control, control, control was the issue here. And it was closely supervised. For example, these cities had plentiful iron foundries after the 5th century BC, and their products were sold to the surrounding rural population in large urban markets. You've got still the notion of the green circle, the residents of the countryside, the peasantry surrounding these increasingly large and crowded cities. For the first time in China, you got true cities in the classic Western sense, with complex relationships of interdependency with surrounding rural populations. Yes, a chasm separated the two, but there was a considerable interdependence between them. One of the big factors in all these changes was the independent development of metallurgy in China. Now, this occurred considerably later in the West. You'll recall that iron was first smelted somewhere in northern Turkey, probably at about the time of the Hittite civilization, perhaps around 1500 BC. In China, it developed later, but was widespread by 500 BC. When the Chinese started using iron, they had one advantage over the West. Their artisans had long been producing bronze vessels with high iron content. So, as iron became more and more available, they began to develop fully iron tools. The metal came gradually into use. It was no great invention. It was just a convenient material. And then there was a very, very fascinating difference between iron smelting in the West and in China. Now, Western smiths smelted iron without adding carbon to it. They forged the iron with repeated hammering and heating. This was a very laborious process. The Chinese, on the other hand, with all their expertise with bronze casting, and the use of iron for basically alloying copper, added extra carbon to the iron during smelting. This lowered the melting point of the iron and yielded not a spongy sort of bloom, but molten ore. Now, molten ore you can cast. So they cast it into molds to produce finished products, just in the same way as for centuries they had been doing this with bronze. So almost immediately, iron technology in China was way ahead of the West, with all the implications for military strategy and so on, and the widespread use of iron that you can imagine.